The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the New York Times and the Washington Post. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we'll be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. On today's Armchair Traveler, we're going to explore how a relatively new phenomenon is posing challenges for communities large and small around the nation, and all this centers around something we've covered recently on Armchair Traveler, and that is the impact of artificial intelligence, also called AI. Now, here's some background. With the introduction of AI, only a few years ago, as a matter of fact, there came a corresponding need for data centers. Now, these were once called server farms, and these are basically repositories for these digital productions. Now, as these centers began to evolve, affected communities began to host hearings that focused on issues like jobs, electricity demand, and the environment. Now we're going to visit a 1,400-acre construction site for Project Jupiter, a proposed artificial intelligence data center in Santa Teresa, New Mexico. Writer David Siegel leads the way with his article, A Mysterious Company Came to Town with a $165 Billion Idea. This article published in the December 7th, 2025 issue of the New York Times. Meetings of the Doña Ana County Board of Commissioners in New Mexico are typically snoozy and sparsely attended, with a handful of spectators in a nondescript room seated on black plastic chairs. But not on September 19th. That session was packed with about 200 onlookers and began with the county attorney delivering a warning from the dais. No booing, no shouting, no standing. Break these rules and you will be asked to leave. Failure to leave, the attorney concluded with a don't-try-me stare, is a criminal offense. With the specter of arrest in the air and a cadre of police officers on hand, Lanham Napier, star of the event, walked to the microphone in complete silence. He wore a dark blue suit and cowboy boots and introduced himself as the chief executive of Borderplex Digital Assets, a data center marketer in Austin, Texas. The company had come to get approval for a venture so ambitious it sounded like the fever dream of a modern pharaoh. On roughly 1,400 acres of flat and vacant scrubland near the Mexican border, Borderplex and its partner, Stack Infrastructure, a data center builder, wanted to build a collection of data centers that would cost $165 billion. The number seemed berserk. The entire U.S. interstate highway system cost less than half as much in inflation-adjusted dollars. Even the International Space Station, underwritten by more than a dozen countries, was a bargain by comparison. It was $150 billion. Now, where this epic sum of money would come from, Mr. Napier did not say, other than briefly noting the source would be, quote, private. Nor was there mention of which companies would actually rent the servers and semiconductors of Project Jupiter, as the venture is called. It had to be one of a handful of big artificial intelligence giants, now ravenous for computing power, but which, if any, had committed to the project was unknown. Before this meeting, some state and local politicians had eagerly embraced Borderplex. County civil servants had negotiated with the company under a non-disclosure agreement that kept the whole enterprise a secret, leaving even Doña Ana's commissioners in the dark. The colossal endeavor was unveiled a mere 3 weeks before the September 19, 2025 meeting, and it was detailed in a 500-page proposal that was both dense and incomplete. Many of the pages were marked draft. Others were missing. Jupiter would sprawl across a desert near a town of 15,000, and there were plenty of unanswered questions about water, about electricity, and about noise and pollution. During his 10-minute presentation, Mr. Napier nodded at those concerns, but he emphasized the financial rewards he would shower on the county. There'd be a 2,500 construction jobs for starters, and over the next 30 years, a total of about $360 million would flow into Doña Ana's coffers. In exchange, as critics would point out, the company would get the mother of all tax breaks, no property taxes, and no taxes on equipment purchased to build the data centers, like servers and networking gear. This is a generational opportunity, Mr. Napier said as he was wrapping up. It is here today, which was to say it would be gone tomorrow. Borderplex would find a more accommodating place for its largesse. In case anyone missed the point, he explained it, a vote to delay is a vote no. A no vote, was exactly what many spectators wanted. A parade of them were given 3 minutes apiece to talk at the microphone, and more than a few vented. The deal was a giveaway, they said. Others noted that no one had performed an environmental impact study. A few years ago, dangerously high levels of arsenic were found in water where the data centers would be built. Would that fiasco recur? Commissioner Susanna Shapiro, the lone skeptic on the commissioner's semicircle dais, made a plea for time. I'm not against your project or for your project, she said, addressing Mr. Napier. I just need more information. None was coming. The seven-hour meeting ended with a 4-1 voice vote to approve Project Jupiter. Billion or bust. It has become a truism that the United States no longer builds much of anything on a grand scale, but one category is a spectacular exception. The country is in the midst of a data center building frenzy. Four companies, Alphabet, Amazon, Meta, and Microsoft, are expected to spend hundreds of billions of dollars on AI-related expenditures like chips and servers this year alone. $7 trillion more, McKinsey predicts, will be needed in the next 5 years. Naysayers contend that the astounding outlays are inflating a bubble that will end with a calamitous pop. Once that happens, they predict, the country will be covered with a lot of empty buildings, perfect for laser tag, and not much else. For the growing number of people now living near data centers, there are more immediate worries. Many face rising electric bills, strained supplies of water, and lots of noise. That has caused a backlash. Some $64 billion in data center deals were blocked or delayed by local opponents in the 12 months after May 2024, this according to Data Center Watch, a research firm. So the industry is looking for friendlier destinations, and those tend to have smaller populations and be more economically challenged. Some of these tertiary markets offer much more of a welcome, said Dan Diorio of the Data Center Coalition, a trade association. I think of Meta in Louisiana, Amazon Web Services in Mississippi, development happening in the state of Indiana. Previously, some of these places would not have been competing for data centers, he said. Doña Ana is a poor county in a poor state, and again, we are in New Mexico. The populace is mostly Latino, and the median household income of $56,000 is well below the national average. Once Jupiter is built, Borderplex and Stack intend to staff it with 750 locals and jobs that start at $75,000. To skeptics, the size of the promised workforce sounds implausibly large, given that data centers are basically high-tech warehouses with a few moving parts that don't require much labor. Supporters, by contrast, regard Project Jupiter as an immense and blinking open-for-business billboard for New Mexico. Once one project comes, says Denise Carter, the head of economic development for Doña Ana County, others follow. Given its profile, surprisingly little is known about Project Jupiter. The contract between the county and the project's partners is available only through an Inspection of Public Records Act request. A week after this reporter asked for a copy of the contract, an email arrived from the Doña Ana County Records Office deeming the request, quote, excessively burdensome. Expect a response by mid-January, the email said. Borderplex, too, is a bit of a mystery. The company's website does not have a list of employees. There's no mention of any previous ventures by the company on the website or in the media. Jupiter appears to be Borderplex's debut. Now, the Austin address listed on its filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission, it was incorporated in Delaware last year, that would have been 2024, is a WeWork space. The company's website once had a leadership section, according to a story by El Paso News. Among those listed was Alicia J. Keys, a former New Mexico Cabinet Secretary of Economic Development, who was appointed by Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham. Another was George Prescott Bush, the son of the former Florida Governor Jeb Bush. Neither returned request for comment. The leadership page is now gone. Having spoken at a handful of public events, Mr. Napier is now keeping mum. He did not acknowledge emails, calls, or texts for comments sent over the course of a week. After a reporter visited the WeWork address, no one from the company was there. An email from Borderplex said the company had nothing to say at this time. Mr. Napier has not been so reticent in the past. In 2019, he published an autobiographical book, Billion or Bust. It's an account of his tenure at Rackspace, a web hosting and cloud services company in San Antonio, which went public 8 years after he joined as chief financial officer. So Billion, not Bust. In 2020, he and his wife were featured in the real estate section of the New York Times, showcasing a stylish and spacious home filled with contemporary art, including a sculpture by Tony Craig that is so heavy the floor had to be reinforced. A specially designed panel that could hide a whiteboard had been installed in the dining room. "It's invisible until you yank the handle," Mr. Napier told the Times. And then out comes this mammoth Lanham world dream. Mr. Napier seems to have shown up in New Mexico with little more than another mammoth Lanham world dream. He is a familiar archetype, the deal-making middleman in a relatively new field. At least a dozen such executives are now crisscrossing the country, says Paul Kudrowski, a fellow at the MIT Initiative on the Digital Economy. They are buying land with access to energy and fiber optics. They are beckoning to AI companies in need of digital horsepower. And they are pitching states and towns on the idea that data centers offer a seat aboard the AI financial rocket ship. It's a wing-it, boom-time market, where you sell first and find buyers later, and everything is supposed to happen at a frantic speed on a gargantuan scale. Project Jupiter is not necessarily a $165 billion endeavor. That's a best-case scenario for a multi-phase build-out contingent on demand. Now, phase one will cost $50 billion, but $165 billion? That's an eye-catching number. It has put both Mr. Napier and Doñana County on the map. It's a very speculative real estate game, but it's sold as a no-brainer for municipalities desperate to land the next big industrial project, Mr. Kudrowski said. And right now, there's this sense among economic development officials that by building a data center, you're joining the future. If you've been trying to land a Hyundai plant for years, a pitch like Jupiter will seem irresistible. The data center surge combines two elements beloved by American speculators over the centuries, Mr. Kudrowski added, real estate and technology. One of those things is behind every bubble in U.S. history, he said. It just so happens that this time we've got both. Next section, the power plant surprise. County officials first learned about Borderplex in November of last year. That would have been 2024. Ms. Keys, the former cabinet secretary, arranged for Stephen Lopez, then Doña Ana's interim county manager, to meet with someone whom she didn't name. Anonymity is pretty common in the opening steps of an economic development dance. The guy had lots of questions. Mr. Lopez, who is now the assistant county manager, recalled in an interview, how long would it take to get the building permits? In 2023, the state had sued local water utility for failing to notify residents about the high levels of arsenic. Where did that stand? Apparently, the man liked the answers. After 45 minutes of talking, he handed over his business card with a name, Lanham Napier. That was a good sign, Mr. Lopez says. Sometimes they don't give you business cards. Some, or rather during negotiations, which went on for months, Mr. Napier signed a memorandum of understanding with Governor Lujan Grisham to build a scaled-back $5 billion version of what would become Project Jupiter. Then, less than a month after the governor's February announcement, supporters of the project in the state legislature handed it a coup. A bill to modernize the public electrical grid had whizzed through the state house with bipartisan support. Then on March 20th, during the two-day rush at the end of the legislative session, State Senator Michael Padilla, a Democrat, introduced an amendment. It allowed Borderplex and any other company to build its own power plant called a microgrid, Moreover, it exempted microgrids from the state's Energy Transition Act, which mandates a shift to zero carbon electricity for investor-owned utilities by 2045, so long as Borderplex does not sell any power to, say, other utilities. Now, in parenthesis, it goes on to say, data centers consume a huge amount of energy. Borderplex says its planned microgrid will use a natural gas-fired turbines to produce between 700 and 900 megawatts of electricity. That's enough to power as many as 800,000 homes. The amendment is intentionally deceptive. I have no problem calling it that, said Stephen Fishman, a former chair of the New Mexico Public Regulation Commission, an independent state agency that regulates public utilities. A vocal opponent of Jupiter, he said the amendment effectively eviscerates the Energy Transition Act. Microgrids are already being planned for other data centers in New Mexico, enough to generate more power than the state currently uses. Once a little more than half the electricity generated here is exempt from the ETA, Mr. Fishman said, the ETA is meaningless. In a phone interview, Mr. Padilla said he wasn't trying to snooker anyone when he wrote the amendment. If Borderplex ever wants to sell its excess power, it will have to comply with the clean energy law, he noted. He also acknowledged with some pride that the bill had helped to make New Mexico more appealing to the industry. We have four or five major data center projects now looking at the state as a result of what we did this year, he said. Next section, you can't drink data. The Project Jupiter site is an hour's drive south of Las Cruces on a swath of land that in mid-October was unmarked but for a dirt road. Pickup trucks were parked nearby, along with a towing vehicle with oversized load written on the back. A man in a lime green safety vest said ground had been broken a few hours before. The new data centers will be built near a vast archipelago of industrial parks and factories in a terminal of the Union Pacific Railroad. There's a duty-free gift shop not far from the border crossing a few miles away, and just over the fence on the Mexico side is a huge Foxconn plant. Doña Ana County will forego property tax revenue from Project Jupiter, accepting something called a payment in lieu of taxes instead. How large will those payments be? After negotiations with the county's economic development team, the payment was set at $12 million a year. If the project lasts for all 30 years of its projected life, that would amount to $360 million. These details and many unknowns about the project are a special concern of Sunland Park, a city 15,000, a few miles from the construction site in Santa Teresa. Its residents have been the loudest opponents of the plan. 2 days after construction began, about 40 of them gathered to form a protest organization. The meeting was held in an empty storefront in a strip mall. There were snacks on a fold-out plastic table, Mexican artwork on the wall, and a large screen on the side of the room where online participants from around the state could participate. A woman named Vivian Fuller led the discussion, passing around a microphone. One of the first orders of business was picking a name. "Shout it out," she said. There was a pause. "Project Jupiter makes us stupider," someone suggested online. "You can't drink data," said someone else. The naming was shelved for another day. What followed was a debate about how to challenge a project with vast resources and powerful friends. Ms. Fuller is a plaintiff in a lawsuit led by the New Mexico Environmental Law Center against the Doña Ana County Board of Commissioners, claiming the financial mechanism for funding Project Jupiter was unlawfully approved. But construction has already begun. Calling this nascent campaign of meetings and litigation quixotic seems an understatement. Later, Ms. Fuller said she and everyone else in the room were more than a little scared by the arsenic episode of 2023. Locals had complained about the taste, smell, and brownish hue of the water for a long time, but only when faucets produced something that looked like slime did local officials start handling out bottled water. The incident is part of a long legacy of mistrust. "We've been fighting for clean, safe drinking water for a long time," said Ms. Fuller, who works for the Empowerment Congress, a nonprofit activist group. "To have this humongous data center come in now, it's awful." On one level, Project Jupiter is a ground-level object lesson in the art of AI-related salesmanship and hype. It was only after Borderplex and Stack won the commissioner's approval on September 19, 2025, 2005 that OpenAI and Oracle publicly committed to the project. A joint news release on September 23rd suggested that Oracle would lease Project Jupiter and that OpenAI would be the ultimate end user. Neither company returned calls for comments. The Times has sued OpenAI for copyright infringement related to news content. The company has denied the suit's claims. As for funding, that came even later. Bloomberg reported in early November 2025 that a consortium of 20 banks, including Goldman Sachs, were providing an $18 billion loan for construction. That's a long way from $165 billion, but that number is like a brightly colored banner on the tent at a carnival, said Mr. Kudrowski, the researcher. It is designed to win attention and attract a crowd. You promise a great thing, you sell the story hard, you get the people to buy in before the thing actually exists, he said. That's how the game's played in this, as he calls it, new industrial revolution. Now, David Siegel, of course, works for the New York Times. He is a business reporter, and he's based in New York City. Well, we're going to turn from that interesting development down in New Mexico, which I think exemplifies things going on around the country when it comes to data center proposals. And we're now going to head in a different direction with, say, making this statement. Wedding season is here, and veteran travel writer Natalie B. Compton reveals that once raucous pre-wedding celebration one-nighters are becoming now luxe multi-day affairs. Now, her article, $500 tea times, private yachts, bachelorette trips, out of control. This article appearing in the March 18, 2026 issue of the Washington Post. The director of communications for a Washington think tank was invited to five weddings this year, a reminder that she is rich in friendship. Less great is the financial creep that comes with attending each. There are the flights, rental cars and accommodations, and welcome dinner outfits and gifts. On top of it all, she's been asked to plan a June bachelorette trip for one of them and trying to do it on a budget. It's not easy task in 2026. She went on her first bachelorette trip in 2015. That was a lake house trip. It cost her $200. Kangas has noted that itineraries have gotten more elaborate. Everything has changed in the last 10 years, said Kangas, age 34. The bachelorette party has grown from a raucous night out with friends to costly group trips, the humble bar crawl replaced by a week in Bali. According to the wedding planner website Joy, the average bachelorette trip costs $1,300 to attend per person, up $600 from 2019. That estimate lines up with what Flora Traveler advisor Anna Huttner sees with her clients, both men and women. People are spending $1,000 to $3,000 per person for a long weekend, she said. Her more luxurious itineraries range from $4,000 to $6,000. Rates go much higher for the more affluent fianced, but at every budget, the trend is eating up more vacation days and money than ever before, and shows no signs of slowing down. Next section, what's fueling the trend? For Americans who move away from home for college, job opportunities, or affordable housing, it's common to have a spread-out social network. Outside of a wedding, sharing an Airbnb in Scottsdale might be your only opportunity to see loved ones in one place, especially when your friends could live all over the country or even the world, said Avery Singer, a co-founder of the luxury travel event planning company Batch Boss. How can you get them together unless you plan a three-day-long weekend to make it worth everybody's time, she continued. Social media has also created a feedback loop that fuels the concept. The more people post about these trips, the more people are inspired to take and post about them. You see one or two people doing something and think, oh, that looks cool, I want to do that, Singer said. Huttner said she often gets requests referencing content from influencers like luxury travel advisor Olivia Furney, who post about the demands of her own billionaire clients. They'll be like, oh, did you see that Instagram? She decorated the whole villa and had this specialty dining group come in. And I'm like, that sounds great, Huttner said. We can't recreate every Instagram moment, but we can absolutely capture this celebratory personal feeling that people want. Esther Lee, editorial director for the wedding planning website The Knot, has noticed that, unsurprisingly, Gen Z is particularly clued in to online trends, spurring the rise of aesthetics when it comes to the bachelor party, she said. That can look like customized invitations and swag, such as drinkware and tote bags, or themes that will resonate with Internet audiences. I saw one where everyone was dressed like the creatures from a Dr. Seuss book, Lee said. Margs and matrimony is a popular theme for Bachelorette at Cabo Villas, a rental company in Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, said President Julie Bird. Employees will decorate villas with signs to match the theme, plus prepare room assignments, balloon backdrops, custom shot glasses, and T-shirts. Some guests opt for over-the-top arrival details like mariachi entertainment and live donkeys. They like custom everything, Bird said. Next section, the sky is the limit. Kensington, a luxury travel company, is used to fulfilling lavish requests, like opening the Louvre Museum after hours for private engagement proposals. So it's no surprise that pre-wedding trips for its high-net-worth clients are over the top, too. We've done a $500,000 yacht charter for bachelor and bachelorette parties, says Edita Scovio, Kensington's vice president of yachts and ultralux travel, whose clients are often business owners and the people who have the inherited generational wealth. It's like the sky is the limit, Scovio said. For batch trips on land, thanks sprawling villas and five-star hotels, Scovio said the price can range from $40,000 to $60,000, unless you add private airfare, a common request. Flights from the U.S. to the Caribbean will add an extra $30,000 per leg, while a private jet intercontinental, we're looking at over $100,000 one way, Scovio said. When it comes to costs, men's trips can run higher than women's. Their group sizes tend to be smaller on average, Jory reports, resulting in a bill being split between fewer people. But they also seem willing to spend more, according to batch bosses Singer. On average, men make more money than women, and so they kind of have more room to play with, she said. If I'm doing a big bachelor party for all finance guys, they don't care what they're spending thousands of dollars at a table in Vegas. Meanwhile, for girls, it's definitely tighter, Singer said. Popular guys' trips activities also add to the cost. Huttner is working on a 2027 bachelor trip to Scotland devoted to golf. Over the five-night journey, the attendees will play up to two courses per day. Just to get the tee times is $500 per person, and that's not even the highest-end ones, Huttner said. If they want to go to the old courses, they're around $1,000 per person. But women are still spending. Scovio recently booked a villa in Bachelorette, in St. Barthelemy. That's costing $100,000. Now, Huttner is working on one for a group called the Miraval Arizona Resort and Spa, where nightly rates are going to start at over $1,000. They're going to do spa treatments and hiking and mindfulness classes and sound healing, Huttner said, of the wellness-focused trip. Making it work. Well, as the Internet ups the ante with customized goodie bags and private jets, civilians can feel compelled to keep up. Every scroll on TikTok is something you should buy, something you should do. These elaborate bachelorettes that look beautiful, said Gracie Bryant, a bride-to-be from Greenville, South Carolina. It's definitely a lot of pressure. When it came time to plan her own trip, Bryant wanted to keep costs down as much as possible while still celebrating her milestone. Thankfully, I have a wonderful group of girls that were like, Gracie, this is the time that you get. So like it. Let's do it. Everyone does it. Well, that brings us to the end of this journey on Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll join us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of the program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. Now, if you have any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.